This is Life, don't miss it.
Want to see the world from a totally different perspective? Ready for provocative conversation, intriguing stories, and inspiration? Then don't touch that dial. Welcome to the Francesca Luca Show. She'll give you something to talk about all week long. Now, here's Francesca.
Hi, everyone. Is it hot enough for you out there? It is unbelievable, but that's Boston. And speaking of which, visiting downtown Boston today would consist of, I'd say, luxury shopping, fine dining, nightlife. But a couple of decades ago, you would have found something really very, very different. Boston's most notorious neighborhood, a 5-plus-acre adult entertainment district, which consisted of all the racy and risque things that you can think of. Crime left and right, dancers stripping to punk rock, hookers turning tricks, and more robberies than you can count. So my guest tonight is Stephanie Shuro. She is the author of her very provocative and shameless tantalizing new book, Inside the Combat Zone, Stripped Down Story of Boston's Most Notorious Neighborhood. She's going to take us on a journey through one of Boston's most exciting and profitable neighborhoods. And she has also written, co-authored with Beverly Ford, The Boston Mob Guy, Hitmen, Hoodlums, and Hideouts. So we've got a really very interesting show ahead of us. So we're going to jump right in. So Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me, Francesca. I'm happy to be here.
So should we start with the Boston Mob Guide or should we start with the Combat Zone? I say start with the Combat Zone.
Okay, whichever you'd like. Sex or crime, you know, it's up to you.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so, all right, well, you write extensively about Boston mobs and gangsters. Can you tell us what inspired you to write about such a subject?
Well, I've been was a reporter for many years. I worked for the Boston Herald. I worked for the Associated Press. And we always knew about the mobsters. I didn't cover them when I was a reporter at the Herald, but it was kind of the backdrop of Boston when I moved here. Everyone had stories about Whitey Bulger. And when I first moved here, it was he was the boss. He was then described as a kind of a Robin Hood kind of character. Mm-hmm. He kept, quote unquote, drugs out of Southie. And even though he was a very bad guy, he was almost like a figure who would help the poor, help the kids, yep, the neighborhood. So I grew up with that. And, of course, that changed as soon as we learned a lot of the facts. So it was always something in the back of my mind. Bev and I were asked to do a book by the History Press, and they actually asked us to do something on the Boston Mafia Guide. And so the first thing we had to do was say, no, no, no. This is a mob. The mafia had a role, but we also had Irish gangs operating in Boston. Mm-hmm. We had a Jewish gangster operating in Boston. In fact, when I wrote about the Brinks robbery of 1950, that particular group was like a United Nations, mm-hmm, of different ethnic groups that were involved in organized crime. So it's kind of a story, another aspect of looking at Boston, looking at its criminal past.
Right. You know, years ago, I lived next door to a woman by the name of Phyllis Karras. You may know of her. She wrote a lot of books about Whitey Bulger. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
If, right?
Okay. I don't know her directly, but did she work with Kevin Weeks?
Yes, she did. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I met her once. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, there was, now that I think of it, yeah. Yeah, it was, I remember walking along the beach and talking to her, and she ended up hooking me up with him, and I was just so enthralled with, like, oh, wow, you know, and it's funny how people, you know, they almost look at criminals in awe, and I years later, so I interviewed him actually twice, once in the very beginning of my career, and then once when Black Mass came out, and then I also interviewed his wife, Anna Weeks. She wrote a book, the heck was the name of it, Women of Southie or something like that. You know, it was something along those lines. But she and all these women of Southie had really this, almost like they were being taken care of by these men. You know, it was just like they were in awe.
They were being taken care of unless they stepped out of line.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
it could be pretty bad for
exactly,
them.
Exactly. But anyway, but I don't want to veer off too much on that yet. I want to just, for our listeners who are unaware of the combat zone, which I can't really imagine, can you give us a brief description of what this is and how major this was in the city of Boston?
Well, first of all, it was very major. Second of all, it was an area right in the downtown crossing area, what we called Lower Washington.
Yep.
So it was right in the heart of the city. And it's basically a red light district. But it also, it started in the, early 60s and developed. And it kind of hit its high point in the 70s. And it started to disappear in the 80s and it was gone kind of by the 90s. But in that district, in that time, you could go to a strip club. You could go to a dirty bookstore. You could go to a peep show. You could go to all-night movies that showed pornography all day, all night. You could pick up a hustler. There were plenty of them on the streets, stopping traffic, coming up to people. And basically, in the days, as one person told me, if people would go there. I mean, you would have a story to tell the rest of your life because it was just this notorious bit of Wild West right in the heart of Boston. But that isn't even the most interesting thing about it. The interesting thing is that it was sanctioned. This area was zoned for adult entertainment. This section of Boston was created in the 70s as an area where they felt that they could control pornography, which was sweeping the nation at the time. And they felt that if they could zone for it, create a district for it, well, what happened in the combat zone would stay in the combat zone. That was kind of the idea. So the trick, of course, was that they, you know, they originally were going to tame it. When I started looking at the combat zone, I was struck by how city officials, particularly it's something called the Boston Redevelopment Association, BRA, was trying to set it up so that there would eventually be development and eventually be a safer place. It was a pretty scary place at the time. And so they thought they could work with the strip clubs and the dirty bookstores, but a lot of them were run by organized crime, and no one was fooling them. They knew that this was only a temporary deal. And sooner or later, they would be forced out. And they were, eventually, but not by the city. Not by the city. By the forces of society. A little thing called the VCR. Do we remember that now?
Mm-hmm.
Tapes you could pop into your...
Yeah.
That's what killed the combat zone. Because pornography was taken out from being a public act to being a private act.
No kidding.
You could do that. And the irony, of course, is when I was finishing my book in the combat zone, the last VCRs were being made. They're no longer being made. So now you, because something called the internet came along, and that took care of it.
Jeez. So the good old internet.
Good old internet.
Yeah.
But during the day, if you walk down the streets of Washington Street, it was lit up. Neon lights, people on the streets, women in scantily clad outfits on the streets, bouncers trying to get you into the clubs. There were also restaurants. There were bars. There were a few just legitimate businesses there. There were hordes of tourists there because whenever there was a convention in the town, men would head off to the combat zone.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I heard that Boston actually created the combat zone as a social experiment. What can you tell us about that?
Mm-hmm. Well, basically, in this time, you got to go back to the period in the 70s when pornography was all over the country. And plus, there'd been a couple of Supreme Court cases in which it said it was part of your First Amendment right. If you wanted to consume this kind of material, you know, it was your right to do that. So pornography was entering the mainstream because there were movies like Deep Throat.
Oh yeah,
I don't know if you recall that.
I do.
Deep Throat Well, Deep Throat was the first X-rated movie that supposedly you could take a date to because things. That's what Roger Ebert once said. But there were these porn hubs popping up all over the city: New York, Detroit, Chicago, and. Because of the restrictions that were being lifted. And it was a sick part of the 60s. Things were changing.
Mm-hmm.
So the feeling was, though, that you could not have in the very heart of Boston this red light district. So the idea was, well, here's what we'll do. We'll zone for adult entertainment in this area. you can be here. You can't be anywhere else, because that would comply with what the Supreme Court said. You can't just ban pornography around the whole city, but you could say, aha, you can have it if you we can ban it elsewhere as long as there was a place for it. And the place for it was the lower Washington area.
So, considering the location of the combat zone, how do you think that it actually affected Boston culture?
Well, it affected in a kind of an underground way. I mean, everybody knew about it. A lot of people went there. I had stories from bartenders that groups of women with girlfriends would go there. So people would go there just for kicks.
Okay, and, then I'm gonna divulge this. I was all of 16 years old, and I was dating this guy. I just had started to date him, and he was my brother's friend. So the four of us, we went out on a little double date, and they said, "What do you want to do?" I said, "I want to go to the combat zone."
Yes. 16. You were one of those women. Yes.
Well, I just want. I was curious. I was curious
which
because I had
you
older.
Went to?
I think I want to say the 2 o'clock lounge. Does that sound right?
Oh, the famous 2 o'clock lounge. Yes.
16 years old. That was a lot of years ago. But it was funny. I don't remember why, but I think it was probably because I had another brother who was older, and you know, he just, we'll just say that he was just very interested in women, and I wanted to know what the fascination was. rest in peace
funny.
There, you know, but anyway, I just finally, when you said that women went there, I was like, well, huh, then I'm going to go ahead and blurt it out, because I kept thinking, do I really want to share this with my listeners?
Well, you and 500 of your closest friends probably went there at one point. I mean, it was a place to go. And the thing was, it was different than it is now. For example, I don't know if you remember much about the show at the 2 o'clock lounge, but in those days, the women did not do pole dancing. There was not the pole dancing.
Well, I don't even know how I got in. I was only, I know I was 16. I remember that well.
They didn't
care back then.
They didn't care so much about that. Yeah, it was pretty loose in those days.
Wow.
But you would have seen women coming out in these sumptuous outfits, these absolutely gorgeous outfits, and taking off like there would be three songs, and by the end of the third song, they would be naked or down to their G-string or something like that. But it was almost like they presented themselves as these goddess figures. I mean, I'm seeing pictures of some of the outfits that women wore, and they were just fantastically beautiful. It's so different from today. I went just for research. Speaking of going for places for research purposes, I went to both of the two remaining strip clubs.
Yeah. For research purposes only. Okay.
Just for research.
Stephanie.
So I went there, and it was kind of bland. I mean, they come out scantily clad, and then they get even more scantily clad. There's a lot of, I don't know if you can say this on the air, but wet work. I'll leave that to your imagination. Pole dancing, writhing around, people sticking money. Women, back in the day, you could not touch the dancers. No, you could not. You could not put money in their G-string like they did. And I'll tell you this, Francisca, even the sight of a writhing naked woman rolling around on a stage will not stop a man from checking his cell phone. So, go figure.
Go figure. All right, we need to take a short break. When we come back, more juicy stuff with Stephanie Shiro, the author of The Combat Zone and The Boston Mob Guy. Don't go anywhere. You'll regret it.
This is Life Don't Miss It.
I'm Francesca, and you're listening to The Francesca Luca Show on 95.9 WATD.
Save your roof and save your money with the South Coast Shingle Savers. South Coast Shingle Savers use a scientifically formulated roof rejuvenating spray treatment that will de-age your roof in no time. Their patented treatment consists of a revolutionary technology which restores your roof's flexibility and provides waterproofing protection, preserving the life of your roof. Treatments from South Coast Shingle Savers come with a 5-year warranty and can extend the life of your roof by up to 15 years. Learn more and get a free quote by visiting southcoastshinglesavers.com. Revitalize your roof today with South Coast Shingle Savers.
Who doesn't go to the hair salon to liven up their looks? But sometimes you look worse on the way out than you did walking in. You can expect something different at Delaria Salon at Wareham Crossing. With a super modern feel that can hardly be mistaken for suburban, they're a full-service hair salon offering cuts, color, highlighting, and formal design. With an impressive following and 5-star rating on Google, Delaria Salon at Wareham Crossing won't disappoint. I know, because I can tell you from my own experience, I felt transformed, and you will too. So if you're looking to turn a few heads, call Delaria Salon at Wareham Crossing today at 508-322-9468. Open 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday. Conveniently located in the Wareham Crossing Shopping Plaza, call them today or book online at DelariaWareham.com. You'll be thrilled. I know you will.
Looking for a touch of luxury amidst the chaos of summer? Let the team at Browse Boutique and Spa highlight your natural beauty. Browse Boutique and Spa, located right in the heart of Cape Cod, is a wonderful place to be wonderful. Owner Dina Bowers brings 13 years of beauty industry experience. They offer permanent makeup, facials, waxing, nails, and more, complete with fresh tea or coffee and breathtaking views of the Cape. Browse Boutique and Spa is open Tuesday through Friday from 9 to 5 and Saturday 9 to 4. Book online at browseboutiquespa.com or call 508-743-5639.
Are you tired of looking tired? Experiencing hormone changes or weight gain? You are not alone. Skin Aesthetics and Buzzards Bay can help you on your journey to live well and be well. If you're looking for a comfortable experience to have your medical spa and wellness treatments and want to restore that youthful beauty to your skin, I've found just the place, Skin Aesthetics in Buzzards Bay. From dermafillers to biostimulators, neurotoxins, and PRP treatments, Angela Nelson is your go-to for medical skin treatments to give you that rejuvenated look and feel. With over 20 years' experience and glowing reviews from many satisfied clients, you can trust Angela Nelson to help you reach your wellness goals. Treat the signs of aging and gravity with all the tools to turn back the clock and get back your vitality. You don't want to wait. Plus, Skin Aesthetics offers other wellness services like body sculpting, contouring, and IV therapy. Embrace the fountain of youth. Begin your journey of self-care today. Visit skin-aesthetics-ma.com. You'll be glad you did. This is Life Don't Miss It. Now, for more of the Francesca Luca Show on 95.9 WATD. All right, we are back. Prostitution, a perverse culture, and gangs that ran the city. This was at the center of Boston in the late 1900s, and the city relied on it to stay afloat. Let me reintroduce my guest. Tonight, Stephanie Shuro, a journalist and author who's an expert on the sketchy past that the doctors won't tell you about. She's diving deep into the history of the infamous combat zone and the gangs that had their grip tightened around the money-making machine that was just in downtown Boston. Welcome back, Stephanie.
Thanks for having me here.
So, can you explain how capitalism affected the combat zone?
It was all pure capitalism. I mean, it was money to make. I mean, there were a lot of sort of counterculture people who got involved there. Some of the dancers were kind of just like a couple more into the punk rock scene, but it was all about money. And
sex sells, right?
Well, sex sells. Sex makes a lot of money. Now, here it is. You have women doing these dances. Beautiful women. Doing these very elaborate routines, beautiful costumes, but part of their job was not just to dance; it was to mingle and mix with the customers and get them to buy hugely overpriced drinks. So they would, after their show, they'd wander among the customers. Hey, can I sit with you? Would you want to buy me a drink? Wow. And they try to convince them to buy these $50 bottles of champagne. In those days, that was a lot of money.
Well, it still is.
And the women and sit with them. So it was slightly degrading, you know, for them. And they made good money. I mean, they all did. But they had to make their quota for mingling to get paid.
So there was
kind of restrictions on them. Yeah, so that was sort of a capitalistic ploy. And they made money hand over fist from these strip clubs.
But that was also a big price tag they had to pay for their... They're sort of compromising their, I don't know, integrity, their dignity, I don't know.
you know, what...
Well, it was interesting. I mean, if you go back to the 70s, I had a long interview with a woman who danced with the name of Miss Bicentennial, a woman named Julie Jordan. Just a wonderful person. Wonder if she's still around. She came to one of my book readings. She's just a fantastic person. She was a young hippie chick,
yeah.
And she didn't have a college education, and she didn't want to work as a secretary. She didn't want to work in a restaurant. Those were the kind of the options for women in those days. So she was. So she tells this great story about wandering into the club in her hiking boots, and she didn't shave her legs, and she said, "I can dance." So she got up and did a number on the bar, and was hired, and then later on to dance for a number of years for the Teddy Bear, I think it was. She could have danced in Park Square as well as in the Combat Zone, but she knew all the people. And so she did it for a couple of years, made a lot of money, and then split. But it was, wouldn't you say compromise? For her, it was a kind of an adventure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me hasten to say that there were a lot of women who did it because of out of necessity.
Right.
One of them were supporting families. And some of them were actually putting themselves through school. I talked to a dancer who I'm still Facebook friends with, and she put herself through school dancing. She's now a dean. She later went to Suffolk University, and now she's the dean of American Studies at college, which I won't name because I don't want to.
Yeah, I don't think she would want to be putting that on a resume, though.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, although she says she's very open about it, but she danced, get this, she danced under the name Lolita. That was her nickname,
goodness.
Lolita.
Oh, my goodness. Stephanie,
but there are let me just say one thing.
Yeah.
There were a lot of women who had no choice.
Yeah,
or unfortunately, maybe some of them use drugs.
Exactly.
And then that just becomes a cycle. But so over the years, the Combat Zone has obviously shrunk a lot. Can you tell me if anything remains of it?
The only thing that remains right now is there are two strip clubs. I believe there's still two. There was something called the Glass Slipper, and then the other one was, I forget what it's called right now. They're right next to each other on LaGrange Street. The other one has changed hands a few times, and I assume it's open. It's the Glass Slipper, though, is interesting because it's been owned by the same family for a long time, a guy who lives in the North End. And it originally started out as the Silver Slipper, and it was in another section of the zone. And because they took some of that area for urban renewal,
mm-hmm.
and they kind of took it away, they had to pay, the BRI had to pay the strip club to move. So they got money from the government to move their business operations. That's
interesting. Yeah. An interesting name to the Glass Slipper. I mean, when I think of the Glass Slipper, I think of obviously Cinderella, right? And the man rescuing the woman
Yeah, not so much in this place. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
But nothing is really left. I mean, I took a walk down there with a man who grew up there. He grew up working for his father, who owned a pizza place
mm-hmm.
in the zone. And we walked around there. He said, "Well, this is where the Naked Eye was, and this is where the 2 o'clock was, and this is where this." And he looked around and he says, "It's all condos. Gosh, I wish."
Oh, of course it is.
Money
yeah.
on that.
Yeah.
And he looked down the ground. And he said, "The only thing that's the same is the street. The street looks as scuffy. The actual physical street with the cobblestone looks as scuffy as ever."
Oh my goodness!
But otherwise, it's all gone.
It's all gone. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Francesca Lucas Show, and I'm speaking to Stephanie Shuro. She is the co-author of the Boston Mob Guide: Hitmen, Hoodlums, and Hideouts, which we haven't even covered yet, and Inside the Combat Zone, which is what we're discussing right now. Stephanie, because the Combat Zone was seen as a place for, obviously, immortality, various minority and LGBTQ groups gathered and were somewhat accepted there, do you think that affected Boston's view of these groups?
Well, I think at the time, the gay community, such as it was very underground. It was kept to itself because of obvious prejudice.
Mm-hmm.
But as you say, it was a place where people could find acceptance. There was a gay bathhouse where a lot of people found a place to hang out. There was in some of the porn shows, the movie theaters, it was actually, even though they were showing heterosexual pornography, a lot of gay men would gather there for hookups. Now, looking back, we'd say, well, that's not so safe, especially when AIDS came around. But at the time, it was a release for men who had very few other ways to meet folks. So that was kind of a release for them. And then plus, there were a number of transsexual dancers who made a living dancing as women, even though they were born a man. They transitioned to be dancers. In fact, I mentioned the sumptuous, wonderful costumes that they made. Mm-hmm. Many of them were made by a woman named Hetty Jo Starr, who was one of the first transsexuals in the history of the country. She was born a man. She became a woman later in life, and she designed many of these costumes. She was kind of famous at the time. So, and then it was just a place for outlaws. It was a place for punk rockers. Like, I talked to a woman who was into the punk rock scene, and so she danced and she helped to manage a bar later on. And so I think it was an area where people just seemed to know each other. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people who hung out there. In fact, there's some online groups where people talk and share their memory, and they say, you know, it wasn't the healthiest place in the world to be, but there was a kind of an aura about it.
Little camaraderie there going on.
Exactly,
there.
Yeah.
Do you think Boston still needs something like the combat zone?
No. I will. I do not. I'll be really blunt. I do not. I think you get enough of it. No, you don't need it, and I'm going to tell you why. Because there is something called neo-burlesque going on, and that's women recreating these old burlesque dances, and you can see them in places like Harvard Square. I went to a couple burlesque shows there. Mm-hmm. The Cambridge YMCA had neo-burlesque show at one point. And these are women stripping down, doing these dances. Here's the difference.
Quinn, I think we're not living in the right place.
Well, they own the means of production. The old dancers the men would get all the money and the women would get nothing. It's put on by women. It's for women. More than half the audience for these shows are women, cheering on other women. And the women are
money.
All sizes, all ages. So that, I think,
bachelorette parties.
it's for bachelorette parties, things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I'm getting kind of preachy here, and I don't mean to, but I do not think we need a comment. Tony, it's we call it the internet now.
Exactly.
Internet,
exactly.
Go to Tinder. I don't. Yeah, we don't need it.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Well, we are going to take another short break. When we come back, though, I want to ask you: out of the notorious gangs in the combat zone, do you know who you thought had the most power? So just think about that, marinate on that, and listeners, stay with us here. Much more to come. Don't go anywhere.
Okay.
This is Life, don't miss it.
I'm Francesca, and you're listening to the Francesca Lucas Show on 95.9 WATD.
Save your roof and save your money with the South Coast Shingle Savers. South Coast Shingle Savers use a scientifically formulated roof rejuvenating spray treatment that will de-age your roof in no time. Their patented treatment consists of a revolutionary technology which restores your roof's flexibility and provides waterproofing protection, preserving the life of your roof. Treatments from South Coast Shingle Savers come with a 5-year warranty and can extend the life of your roof by up to 15 years. Learn more and get a free quote by visiting southcoastshinglesavers.com. Revitalize your roof today with South Coast Shingle Savers.
Who doesn't go to the hair salon to liven up their looks? But sometimes you look worse on the way out than you did walking in. You can expect something different at Delaria's Salon at Wareham Crossing. With a super modern feel that can hardly be mistaken for suburban, they're a full-service hair salon offering cuts, color, highlighting, and formal design. With an impressive following and 5-star rating on Google, Delaria's Salon at Wareham Crossing won't disappoint. I know, because I can tell you from my own experience, I felt transformed, and you will too. So if you're looking to turn a few heads, call Delaria Salon at Wareham Crossing today at 508-322-9468. Open 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday. Conveniently located in the Wareham Crossing Shopping Plaza, call them today or book online at DelariaWareham.com. You'll be thrilled. I know you will. Beyond Aesthetics in Westport empowers you to be your own kind of beautiful with an exclusive and customizable experience. With an unmatched catalog of services, Beyond Aesthetics is your one-stop personal health shop, offering skin treatments, microneedling, laser hair removal, and the Glow 2 Facial, a breakthrough treatment that unlocks the body's natural superpowers. Exfoliate with O2 bubbles, amplify with Lux via their light ultrasound experience, and detox via lymphatic massage. You can feel the magic. So clear your mind and recharge your body at Beyond Aesthetics, 1125 State Road in Westport. Services are by appointment only, so book yours online today at beyondaestheticswestport.com. Beyond Aesthetics, invigorating you, mind, body, and soul.
The time is now to finally install that new patio or fire pit that's been in your dreams. Your home is ready to be beautified with stonework, but when the time comes, you want and need the best. That's where Stein Masonry comes in. Stein Masonry provides the best in high-quality construction and hardscaping services. With an experienced and dedicated team, they'll tailor any project to your specifications. When you decide it's time to enhance your home, don't mess with less than the best. Trust the guys you know. Stein Masonry. Family owned and operated and local. Visit them online today for a free quote at steinmasonry.com.
This is Life Don't Miss It.
Now, for more of the Francesca Luca Show on 95.9 WATD.
All right, we are back, and my guest this evening is Stephanie Shiro. She's written many books, but the two that we're talking about, half of the show, we've been discussing Inside the Combat Zone, the stripped-down story of Boston's most notorious neighborhood, and then we are going to ask her a couple quick more questions about the Combat Zone, and then we're going to transition to talking about her other book that she co-authored with Beverly Ford, The Boston Mob Guide, Hitmen, Hoodlums, and Hideouts. Big welcome back to you, Stephanie. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
So, prior to the break, out of the notorious gangs in the Combat Zone, who do you think had the most power?
Well, there were two names. One was a guy named Joe Palladino, and he was an associate of the Angiulos.
Oh, yeah.
The Angiulo family were the Italian mafia.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Ran the North. Yeah. But Palladino was very much involved with them. He kind of answered to them, and he owned a lot of the bookstores in the area, four or five. So he made a lot of money off of that. And like a lot of mafia bosses, people who knew him had mixed opinions. Some said he was a very, very shrewd businessman. He only wanted the best. Another one remembered him as somewhat scary and somewhat of a cheapskate. Mm-hmm. But he also had, there were also three brothers, Teddy, Arthur, and Louis Venius, were Greek. They're Teddy Venus, that's how one of them was known, was very well known. And he was known for having an interest in particularly the 2 o'clock lounge. And these were, they later ran afoul of the law, I think spent some time in prison for some of their activities, which consisted of money laundering and trying to get the money, the profits, and launder it in such a way that they didn't have to pay taxes on it. They may have been laundering drug money, also prostitution as well. Palladino is interesting because he hired a very prominent attorney, a woman named Sister. She was a former nun who became an attorney, and Regina Quinlan. And the former sister, after she left, that became a First Amendment attorney. So she never identified him by name, but I kind of figure out that she helped to defend him on First Amendment charges. And her attitude was, I don't like pornography. I really hate it, but I defend your right or somebody's right to look at it. So there are, as I say, a lot of interesting bedfellows that were created in the Combat Zone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right, we are going to, I'm sure our listeners are interested also in your other book, The Boston Mob Guide, Hitmen, Hoodlums, and Hideouts. So let me just ask you, let's start with James Whitey Bulger, right? This notorious mobster left the biggest, do you think he left the biggest impact on Boston?
Definitely. Oh, definitely. He had an outsized impact on the city. He was involved with Oh, so many things. He was involved with the anti-busing movement in Southie. He orchestrated a huge number of hits around the city, sometimes with his partner in crime, Steve the Rifleman Fleming.
Oh, yeah.
So he basically ran a lot of business, even businesses that you wouldn't think were mobbed up, he had a hand in. So he had a hand in robberies he had nothing to do with. Just down the street from me, where I live in Medford, there was a robbery of a bank, a transit bank, some sort of thing. And he actually hit up one of the robbers. He demanded a cut of the loot, and when he didn't, he forced the guy to give up the money, and then he had him killed. He killed him. He didn't have him killed. He killed him himself. So he was involved. He had fingers in a lot of pots all throughout the city,
Stephanie, why do you think that people are so fascinated with this kind of stuff?
Well, I think we've always been interested in the villains and the bad boys and the dark characters. I mean, you only have to look at The Sopranos for that.
But why? Do you think?
I think it's because they are such a mixture of violence and average characters. We look at someone like Tony Soprano and say, he seems like a pretty decent guy, except when he's not. Then he can be a vicious killer. And Whitey Bulger was well known to a lot of people, and yet he was a pretty notorious killer of not only just fellow mobsters, two girlfriends of Steve the Rifleman Fleming died. Mm-hmm. The both of them argue who killed the two women, but two women died because of their association with them. So I think the more that you look at Whitey, the more you look at his life and the reality of it, the less fascinated you'll be and the more horrified you'll be. I'll tell you, in looking at those criminals, he horrified me, but he horrified me less than the two FBI agents that he was an informant for and who looked the other way while he was doing the killing.
Right.
That, to me, is horrific.
Right. I remember when the first time I interviewed Kevin Weeks, I never forget this. I was, it was a Sunday afternoon. It was a live show as well. And he just seemed like such a regular guy. He came in with his girlfriend at the time, who was now his wife, Anna Weeks, and I remember her saying to me, "Oh, where'd you get your boots? I love them." She just seemed like a regular woman, a little flaky maybe, but anyway, I just remember that night going home and saying, you know, what? I was shaking my head like, I don't know. It seems like this guy like kills by day and eats popcorn and watches movies by night. And I couldn't like grasp it. Like I couldn't, I know, I understand compartmentalization, but this like goes a little far, you know? And, but years later, I interviewed him and then I had a completely different mindset. It was just like, yeah, this guy's something, you know? And I remember asking him if there was, you know, cause of course he had the big thing with Whitey, and I said, if there was just one thing that you could say to Whitey, what would it be? And he said, oh, just one word, why? And I said, why? You know, I thought that was kind of interesting, and I said, you know, it reminds me of the story of the snake that asked the guy, you know, walking along the woods to pick him up, and the guy says, no way, you're a snake. And the snake says, oh, please, please, I'm not feeling well, please pick me up. And the guy says, no way, you're a snake. And he said, I promised you I will not bite you. And the guy says, okay, picks up the snake, and sure enough, the snake bites him, and the guy says, hey, you bit me. And he goes, what do you expect? I'm a snake. You know, so, so you know, it's just kind of like, this is, you know, this is they're not going to be a criminal in their own home. They're going to have dinner with their wives or their girlfriends or whatever, their kids, maybe, whatever. I mean, I suppose they do have one side. I think Kevin Weeks actually was the godfather of one of, the other way around. Whitey Bulger was the godfather of one of Kevin's kids, right? I don't know if you knew that or not, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, it doesn't surprise me, but I have a why question. Like, why is this guy walking around?
Who?
He was involved. Kevin Weeks.
Wow.
He was involved with many of these criminals. Well, he was a lookout for Brian Halloran, who got gunned down by Whitey.
Right.
He participated in all this. So I'm not saying maybe he paid his dues, maybe he's out, but this country likes to rag on criminals. We shouldn't be letting them out. Mm-hmm. Why is Kevin Weeks walking around?
Right.
Why is Johnny Martirano?
Right.
20 people he killed. 20 people he killed, at least, that he can remember. And he's as far as we know, a free guy, maybe in witness protection.
Yeah.
But he was responsible for some of the most heinous crimes here, and yet he testified in the Bulger trial as well. But that's what I mean. I think it is dangerous to try to glamorize this.
Well, exactly.
And let me draw a parallel to the combat zone. I mean, one of the things when I did write about the combat zone, I tried to avoid what we would call the male gaze. I tried to view it not from the viewpoint of a man enjoying a strip club, but from the viewpoint of women who have to dance in these clubs. And I think the same could be true with the mob. You have to be a little careful to be aware that the people they killed, they just killed other mobsters. But those mobsters had children. Those mobsters had wives. They had grandchildren. So I don't mean to be a downer on that, but I think that's something. In fact, we saw this with Whitey. I mean, he, like I said, when I moved to Boston, he was considered a folk hero.
Oh, yes,
and
he
I
was.
Don't think I don't think people would view him like that now.
Mm-mm. I am curious how Boston did change after the capture of James Whitey Bulger, but we do need to take a short break, and then we're going to come back to our last segment. How much time do we have in this last segment? 10 minutes. Okay. All right, Stephanie. And listeners, stay with us here. More to come.
This is Life Don't Miss It.
I'm Francesca, and you're listening to The Francesca Lucas Show on 95.9 WATD. Who doesn't go to the hair salon to liven up their looks? But sometimes you look worse on the way out than you did walking in. You can expect something different at Delaria Salon at Wareham Crossing. With a super modern feel that can hardly be mistaken for suburban, they're a full-service hair salon offering cuts, color, highlighting, and formal design. With an impressive following and 5-star rating on Google, Delaria Salon at Wareham Crossing won't disappoint. I know, because I can tell you from my own experience, I felt transformed, and you will too. So if you're looking to turn a few heads, call Delaria Salon at Wareham Crossing today at 508-322-9468. Open 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday. Conveniently located in the Wareham Crossing Shopping Plaza, call them today or book online at DelariaWareham.com. You'll be thrilled. I know you will.
Train the way the Navy SEALs and pro athletes train with Ultimate Human Performance, a training program crafted by best-selling author and master physiokinesiologist Joe Hippensteel. Ultimate Human Performance teaches you the world's most advanced training methods to eliminate pain and injury. They've helped change the lives of over 10,000 clients across 56 countries and will change your life too. Do you suffer from chronic pain? Are you looking to regain the flexibility you had when you were young? The Joe Hippensteel method will give you back your youth, eliminate pain, and help build a better you. And the best part is, you can do it all from the comfort of your home with Ultimate Human Performance's online video courses. Learn everything from the fundamentals to advanced techniques to help relieve your pain for good. Looking for something in person? Book a one-on-one session or attend one of Ultimate Human Performance's 3-day seminar events. Reclaim your body with Joe Hippensteel's Ultimate Human Performance. Find out how to live pain-free today at ultimatehumanperformance.com.
Are you tired of looking tired? Experiencing hormone changes or weight gain? You are not alone. Skin Aesthetics and Buzzards Bay can help you on your journey to live well and be well. If you're looking for a comfortable experience to have your medical spa and wellness treatments and want to restore that youthful beauty to your skin, I've found just the place, Skin Aesthetics in Buzzards Bay. From dermafillers to biostimulators, neurotoxins, and PRP treatments, Angela Nelson is your go-to for medical skin treatments to give you that rejuvenated look and feel. With over 20 years experience and glowing reviews from many satisfied clients, you can trust Angela Nelson to help you reach your wellness goals. Treat the signs of aging and gravity with all the tools to turn back the clock and get back your vitality. You don't want to wait. Plus, Skin Aesthetics offers other wellness services like body sculpting, contouring, and IV therapy. Embrace the fountain of youth. Begin your journey of self-care today Visit skin-aesthetics-ma.com. You'll be glad you did.
Need a reliable place for your pet? Does your dog crave extra stimulation instead of social isolation? Sign up for doggy daycare at the Dog's Den in Pembroke. With two separate yards and plenty of supervision, your dog will have a ball and tug-of-war toys and plenty of new friends. The Dog's Den also specializes in grooming. Each groomer at the Dog's Den has decades of experience and will leave your furry friend refreshed and ready for their next adventure. Schedule your grooming or daycare today at thedogsdengrooming.com.
Beyond Aesthetics in Westport empowers you to be your own kind of beautiful with an exclusive and customizable experience. With an unmatched catalog of services, Beyond Aesthetics is your one-stop personal health shop, offering skin treatments, microneedling, laser hair removal, and the Glow 2 Facial, a breakthrough treatment that unlocks the body's natural superpowers. Exfoliate with O2 bubbles, amplify with Lux via their light ultrasound experience, and detox via lymphatic massage. You can feel the magic. So clear your mind and recharge your body at Beyond Aesthetics, 1125 State Road in Westport. Services are by appointment only, so book yours online today at beyondaestheticswestport.com. Beyond Aesthetics, invigorating you, mind, body, and soul.
This is Life Don't Miss It.
Now, for more of the Francesca Luca Show on 95.9 WATD.
All right, we are back. We're in the last stretch, and I'm hoping that I can get all the questions in, Stephanie, that I have for you. So before the break, I asked you, how did Boston change after the capture of Whitey Bulger?
Yeah, and I think that the city started to realize the facade behind this guy.
I think
what happened is that the people had been a couple things happened. One is that at first he was kind of had this aura of being a kind of Robin Hood, but then it was discovered that but he was also an FBI informant. So while he was executing other people and describing other people's rats, he was feeding information to the FBI through John Conley and a guy named H. Paul Rico. So he was playing both sides of the field, and suddenly he didn't look so kind of like an outlaw chic anymore.
Right. When you were writing about these infamous characters, did you ever come across a story or fact about them that made you sympathize with them, or?
Yes. I think you can't help but having some sympathy for people in the sense that you get to know them a little bit, and you wonder if things had been a little bit different, maybe they could have had a different kind of life. Like, let's take the case of Joseph the Animal Barboza. Okay, I don't know if sympathy is the right word, but he was he was born to Portuguese immigrant parents.
Yep.
And he tried to be a professional boxer. He was good looking. He loved children. He loved animals. Women really loved this guy, Joe. So he spoke three languages. He was a great cook. But he had a temper, and he was called the Animal because he once bit someone's ear off in a fight. So he was very much involved with all kinds of organized crime, and he was quite the figure in Boston. In doing my research on other books, I always come along references to somebody who bumped into someone in an after hours bar, and then afterwards someone said, "Do you know who you bumped into? You jumped into Joe Barboza." And like, oh my God, I'm glad I didn't bump into him very hard. But he was he actually gave an interview to Natalie Jacobs, and Ron Galvin, it was aired on that show, and when he described being a loan shark person in very blunt details on how it worked, how it was being a loan shark person. If you didn't get pay up, he'd beat you up, and he would say, "Well, it's nothing personal; it's just part of my job." But he was very blunt about him. So I don't know if it's sympathy, but he was not an unintelligent guy. He was a smart guy.
Disassociation.
And maybe if something had happened to him, it might have been different for him. There's a good example of that. One of the mobsters who was involved with the Irish gang wars, he was there at the beginning of it. And he afterwards realized this was no good. He went off to Hollywood to ply his trade as a actor, and he became a famous actor. And the guy, his name was Alan Rocco. That's what the name he acted under. His name was different when he was in Boston. But he was in the Godfather movie, and he was the guy who was getting a massage and was shot through the eye. I don't know if you remember that scene in The Godfather.
Yep.
But he died just a few years ago. But he managed to get out of the scene and go on to have a very lucrative career as an actor, playing gangsters in many cases. So you think about these people. Whitey Bulger was highly, highly intelligent. He maybe could have done something with that. Look at his brother, you know.
Right.
The fact they both came from the same family is
remarkable.
Is one of those.
Well, I know, but children can come, you know, children come from the same family all the time and have entirely different personalities. I will go back to Kevin Weeks, because I remember him telling me that his father was a very difficult man, and, you know, like a B-plus was never good enough, and he used to get beat up and so on and so forth. So, you know, you don't know where people necessarily come from or how it affects their psyche. And, you know, when you've been abused so much, I mean, I think that disassociation is not necessarily uncommon. I just wanted to shift gears here a little bit with just a little bit of time left. Did you find, Stephanie, your sources eager to help you shed light on the city's mobster history, or did you have to actually pry?
Not really. We didn't have to pry, because basically, all that information is public access. I mean, a lot of this has been printed in the newspapers. It's legends. It's been detailed very much. What we did with this book is we pulled it all together. We did not do the kind of original research that you'd find in some other really great books about Whitey Bulger by colleagues at the Globe and even at the Herald. Howie Carr's books. Howie had to take his stuff with. He needed some fact checking from time to time. But Kevin Cullen's books, good books.
Yeah.
But a lot of this is public information. Yeah. It isn't that hard to find out. These people talked very openly about it in court.
Yep.
So in court, we went through a lot of court transcripts, and so you could find out information that way. So. There are some things we'll never know. Some things that are lost in terms of where some bodies are buried, literally where some bodies are buried, some of the motivation for some of these things. People are going to take their secrets with them. Like the Gardner heist. I haven't written about that, but I'm fascinated by that case, the art case of the Isabel Stewart Art Museum.
Yep.
I don't know if that's ever going to be solved. I think that will die with people. But the question is, if Whitey wasn't involved with that, maybe somebody in his circle was. Mm-hmm. We won't ever know. So, for example, the two women that Fleming's girlfriends. Did Bulger kill them or did Fleming kill them? We don't know. They both say it was the other person, but we'll never know who it was.
With just about, what do we have, like a minute left, Quinn? Just about a minute left. One last question. So much has been obviously written about the Boston mob history. Stephanie, what sets your book apart or books apart?
Our book is the encyclopedia of mobsters. It's the one you'll want when you're reading the other books. In other words... People throw around names, they throw around this, and you're going, now, who is this guy? You look to our book, you go to the index, you look it up, it has it all neatly arranged in sort of encyclopedia fashion. So we felt our book is a companion to the, you might call it the Cliff Notes of mobs, but it's the kind of book that will help readers understand what's going on. Because we go back to the beginning. We go back to the Augustan gang. We go back to King Charles, King Solomon, who once owned the Coconut Grove nightclub.
Mm-hmm.
We go back into some very obscure aspects of history, like the Highlight killings. A lot of people don't remember them and how notorious they were. So we provide that kind of material. Now, Bev, my co-writer, she was a cop reporter. So she covered the Whitey Bulger case, the trial. She had dealings with the Angiulos. She had stuff from her own member in her files. So she had that. I was sort of the coordinator of helping to put it together. But Bev Ford is just an amazing cop reporter. She was a cop reporter for many years, so she knew a lot of criminals, and she had dealings with a lot of these guys.
Stephanie Shiro, it has been an absolute pleasure. Listeners, if you want to pick up the book, Inside the Combat Zone, the stripped-down story of Boston's most notorious neighborhood, great beach read, along with the Boston Mob Guide, Hitmen, Hoodlums, and Hideouts. Thanks again for being with us tonight. It's really been a pleasure.
Oh, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. All right, we need to wrap things up and say goodnight. I hope you enjoyed the show. See you next time.
What if you took the time to really soak it in? 'Cause someday you're gonna wish you did. Like a September morning, like snow without a warning, like how the summer feels upon your skin.
Don't miss it.